barrels a day and exporting more than 200,000. Bravo to them. Income from the exports will total $2 billion this year. Let's hope they can keep from having to be under the finger of Yankee imperialist refinery processes. Double last year's. And Pemex says exports could bring $11.5 billion by 1985. 80% of Mexico's oil is exported, now that's the catch, to the United States. The rest goes mainly to Israel. But the government is trying to diversify markets by increasing sales to, of all places, Cuba. Good. Bravo. Meanwhile, the debate continues in Mexico over how to make use of the oil to solve economic problems. And even in Washington, there is a skepticism that oil will make a difference. Mexico's income distribution ranks among the most unequal in the world, and unemployment reaches as high as 50% in some areas. There is no way that oil, its extraction, its refinement, or its marketing will improve employment in Mexico, a State Department economist told the Wall Street Journalist, adding, given the way Mexico is organized, the oil boom could worsen the income distribution. Certainly it will, until some form of socialism develops. We all know about that. We see that in the Somoza regime. A little more news and then we will quit. Yeah. Chairman Wei confers with the Shah of Iran. Tehran was carefully chosen for Chinese Communist Party. Chairman Wei Guofeng itinerary. Although no hint was given to the press until the Chinese leader left for Romania, that Yugoslavia, that he would also travel to Iran. The first non-communist state selected for a visit by this international communist, chairman of the People's Republic of China. Because Shah of Iran was a U.S. ally and strategically located between the Soviet Union's southern border and the oil-rich Persian Gulf. Although no joint communique was issued when Wei left Tehran September in the first week after a four-day visit, it was assumed that the two leaders discussed their parallel interest in countering Soviet influence in the Persian Gulf and Indian Ocean region. In public, however, Wei toned down the anti-Soviet rhetoric from his previous stops in Belgrade and Bucharest, apparently at the request of the Shah, who does brisk trade with the Soviets and Eastern Europeans and does not want in any way, he absolutely does not want in any way to have any antagonism from his powerful northern Soviet neighbor. Chairman Wei's visit, nevertheless, bolstered the Shah's domestic and international prestige at a time of growing internal opposition to his rule. Thousands were rebelling against the dictatorship of the bloody Shah throughout nearly every village of Iran. The Shah's opponents even held a major demonstration of some 25,000 people within a mile. Yes, within a mile of Chairman Wei's residence, hoping the Chinese leader would witness the violent confrontation. But Chairman Wei avoided the demonstrations in the capital and canceled plans to see the crown jewels and a Royal Museum for security reasons. It's hard to see how, as much as we understand the chauvinism, the pain, the opium wars, the Boxer rebellions, that how in the nuclear age a communist nation with such power, such technology, they build underground cities, complexes that can save, according to most estimates, 700 million of their people. And the Soviets have done the same, built humane shelters, as well as Sweden, a social democracy. It's hard.
Attention. We'll continue the news, knowing that often Loeb goes out wandering about. We'll remain just optimistic about his adventuring patterns. Chairman Wei confers with Shah. Tehran was carefully chosen for Chinese communist. Tehran was carefully chosen for the Communist Chinese Party Chairman Wei Guofeng, his itinerary, although no hint was given to the press until the Chinese leader left for Romania and Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia is an aligned communist nation, as you are familiar, and Romania is a Warsaw Pact member, but it follows a more individualistic course. For instance, it recognizes the State of Israel. Anyway, he left for Romania and Yugoslavia. That's when he announced it after that he would also travel to Iran, the first non-communist state selected for a visit by a Chinese party chairman, was a U.S. ally, strategically located between the Soviet Union's southern border and the oil-rich Persian Gulf. Although no joint communique was issued when Wei left September last week, after a four-day visit, it was assumed that the two leaders discussed their parallel interest in countering Soviet influence in the Persian Gulf. I'm going over this again because some said they didn't get it. And Indian Ocean region. In public, however, Chairman Wei toned down his anti-Soviet rhetoric from his previous stops in Belgrade, Yugoslavia, and Bucharest, Romania, apparently at the request of the Shah, who does brisk trade with the Soviets and Eastern Europeans, and does not want to excessively antagonize his powerful northern neighbors. Wei's visit, nevertheless, bolstered the Shah's domestic and international prestige at a time of growing internal opposition to his rule. The Shah's opponents are myriad, many all over the world, even 20,000 held a major demonstration within a mile of Wei's residence, hoping the Chinese leader would witness the violent confrontation. But Wei avoided seeing reality, as it seems the Chinese have chosen to do in foreign policy matters, the demonstration in the capital and canceled plans to see the crown jewels and a royal museum that because of security reasons. In another major diplomatic move demonstrating China's flexible foreign policy, Peking may be about to settle its 17-year-old border dispute with India as a prelude to full normalization with New Delhi. A leading member of the Indian Parliament and of the ruling Janata Party, Subramanian Swamy, told reporters in Peking last week that high Chinese officials told him China is preparing to reach a settlement of the dispute. Swamy said the breakthrough, which came during a visit of Peking next month by might come during a visit of Peking next month by Indian Foreign Minister Vajpayee. Pai. We have to say, in all fairness, that China certainly has been a great aid to the liberation of Guyana. She has given aid, according to cabinet minister friends that we've spoken to, without any strings attached. She has given brave support to Mozambique in their war with imperialism, and even crossed USA in doing so. She has done the same in Zambia. She has also assisted bravely the North Koreans in their just demand for reunification. China has a doctrine of three worlds, and unfortunately, the nuclear age does not have time for us to pass through it, according to many theorists at least. China considers the USSR and the USA to be the first world. They consider the most dangerous of the two to be the USSR. Critics say they take their statistics on CIA figures, which does not give a representative analysis. Anyway, they point out that there are double the fighting force in the Soviet Union than there is in the USA. Also, being a monolithic structure, China says that the Soviets can have more solidarity. However, one thing they do not regard, according to some critics from BBC, is that half of the Soviet army are engaged in health services. Nonetheless, that's her doctrine. And the second world includes the major industrial nations of the earth, including Japan. And her purpose is to woo as many of those away from the superpower, from the hegemony that is obvious, that USSR and USA have great power in the world. So China sees herself as the leader of the third world, and she is doing all she can to form trade relations, even some that are not acceptable to some of the capitalist NATO alliance. Anything to build up more strength for China and more strength for the third world. Also, China's doctrine, as you know, is based on the inevitability. That means the absolute certainty of nuclear war. It's China's feeling that one must get it over with. China has hundreds of miles of complexes of underground cities for their people, and they feel that there is no way at this stage, with the proliferation of weapons and the distrust between nations, that nuclear war can be avoided. A bit of decision at the White House, pressure from within the administration, from Senator Henry Jackson, has led President Carter to back off his decision August 10 to approve sale to the Soviet Union of an electron beam welder. The welder is a part of a $144 million deal for a drill bit factory made by Dresser Industries of Dallas. The White House announced last week that Carter had called the review of that decision to hear any new objections to the sale. Administration sources said that Carter's advisors were split 3-2 over the deal, with National Secretary Advisor Brzezinski, long known for his right-wing stands, Energy Secretary Schlesinger, and Defense Secretary Brown against the sale. And we all know their backgrounds from Southeast Asia. They've always been known as war hawks. The opponents' position was strengthened by the report of a Pentagon-appointed panel headed by Fred Busey, president of Texas Instruments, which recommended against the sale, recommended at the end of the sale last month, that Busey pointed that the Dresser deal would vastly improve the Soviet Union's capability to drill deep oil wells through solid rock, thus aiding its economy, and that it would upgrade Soviet metallurgical capabilities that would have military application, a claim reportedly disputed by Brown himself. But Carter reversed himself again. He seems to be doing this more and more. Of course, as we have the good author in our midst today who wrote Rush to Judgment, he probably knows what happens to those high level like Senator Kennedy, President Kennedy, Malcolm, and Martin Luther King when they get out of step. Carter's reversed himself again. The White House announced September 6th, 16, that Carter had decided to override the objections of some of his advisors and that the Busey panel and allow the Dresser deal to go through. The decision was announced as Chief Strategic Arms Limitation Talk SALT negotiator Paul Warnke arrived in Moscow for another round of talks. Carter has made many of these decisions of late because when he refused to sell the computers to the Soviet Union, all he succeeded in doing was making the West Germans richer, who already have a surplus in their banks because the Soviets got the computer from France. And also some other banned items the French sold. Those are the contradictions that sooner or later bring down the capitalist system. Only socialism will serve the people well. And only a socialism based on cooperation. We don't work, we don't eat, as the Prime Minister of our country recommends. A socialism that does not preach race, as the opposition did when they said upon Jot, vote your own kind. Only such a courageous form of socialism is the answer to all nations of the world, and most particularly to the Third World. Thus ends the news and commentary for the day. Thank you.